speaker, we have a special presenter for our main speaker, Sierra. Come over. A celebrant meeting thing. Celebrating. Stuff.
Thanks, Jake. And thanks, Riley. That's some good shit. I'm Sierra. I'm an alcoholic. This is fucking weird. And I celebrated a year on October 11th this year. Woohoo. And what we do at YPG is we allow the celebrants to pick a speaker. Usually there's a couple, but some miscommunications, clearly. I remember I came to this meeting after I first came back into the program after relapsing, and I saw my first woman speaker here. And she totally blew my fucking mind. I was like, damn, she looks like she's got her shit together. She's beautiful. She looks like a badass. Like, she doesn't take shit from any of the guys here. And she's fucking so raw and honest. And I go to, we have a couple of home groups that are the same. So, you know, all the meetings that I go to, that she's there, she always says some shit. And she owns up to when she's wrong. And she always reaches out to a newcomer, and she's always seeking opportunities of service. And she just has been such a great example of, you know, what this program can do and how I should align myself with the program. Hi, I didn't see you. Sorry. And I thought that what a great way to celebrate than to ask Jesse to speak.
I'm Jesse. I'm an alcoholic. Hey guys. I do not have my shit together ever. It's a very rare occasion, so that was sweet. I appreciate that. Thank you, Sierra, for asking me to speak. It's so cool to watch somebody like really grow and come into their own in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I remember when Sierra first came back, she was not having it. She's not interested. She was, you know, that feeling of like uncomfortable, freaked out, my skin doesn't fit, but I hate everybody at the same time. Like, please help me, but if you get near me, I might punch you kind of feeling. Like, she had a lot of that going on. She would just be honest about everything, like where she was at, when she was freaking out, when she didn't know what to do. And this is always my thing, like, you're right where you're supposed to be. You know, no matter what you're going through, you're right where you're supposed to be. And that's something I have to remember on the regular, you know, because I get caught up in, you know, like, oh, is my life looking like it? I think it should, you know, or, you know, I'm uncomfortable right now and I don't like the way it feels. I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And I learned that here. You know, I learned that from you guys. But I have a sobriety date. It's August 2nd, 2010. I have a home group. It is the Red Door group. We meet every single night of the week, super duper late, which I love. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. And I owe my life to Alcoholics Anonymous, for sure. You know, I'm from here. Like here, like South Tampa. My whole family lives within like a 4-mile radius. I don't know, like, I'm gonna tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. What it was like is, I loved to drink. I was real good at it. That was my superpower, for sure, you know. I don't come from a broken home. I didn't grow up wanting for anything. I didn't have like a creepy experience with a family member. Like, there was nothing that screaming in my childhood would have been like, oh, she's gonna be alcoholic, you know. Like, my mom's alcoholic, for sure. And my grandfather had, on my dad's side, he died with like 27 years sober, which was super cool, like, once I got sober, which was long after he passed away, so I never really got to appreciate it. You know, my dad dabbled with addiction and, like, all that stuff, and, like, there was trauma growing up, but none of the stuff, right, that should say I was gonna grow up to be alcoholic. I do know that I'm super weird. Like, I'm very uncomfortable all of the time. I'm afraid of everything. All those sweet, kind things that Sierra said about me, like, none of them are true from my perspective. Like, I'm afraid of everybody. I'm like a small chihuahua. Like, if I get cornered, like, I might attack you because I'm just terrified all the time. I care so much about what I think people think about me. And not so much really about what you actually think, but it, like, the stuff that goes on up here is just, it's insane, you know. If you took a day in the life and like hung out inside my head, it would scare anybody, you know. I think Stephen King would be uncomfortable hanging out in the head of most alcoholics. But I do know that, like, because of that, like, I was so uncomfortable all of the time, and like, I wasn't. I don't know. I think I'm pretty cool now, but that's just because I've like become okay with myself, and I work the 12 steps, and I have a relationship with God, and therefore, like, I'm pretty all right with me. But prior to getting sober, especially when I was younger, like, I was not cool, you know? Like, I'm just loud. I don't know what to do with my hands all the time. If I liked a boy, I would either punch him or just, like, scream. And I'm talking, like, 17 years old. Like, it's not a good look. I had real strict parents. My dad and my stepmom are just, like, super, super good people. They work really hard, and they think you should get straight A's and not lie. And I was just not into that. And, you know, so, like, but I do, I was thinking about this earlier. I, like, always wanted to have some tragedy happen to me when I was little. Like, I was listening to a speaker talk about wanting to be from a broken home, and I identify with that so much. Because I can remember, like, really far back, I wanted to be kidnapped so bad. Because, like, not because I was, like, a seeker of danger or anything at, like, 8. But I wanted the, like, when she got returned, everybody would be so excited to see Jesse, and there'd be, like, a parade and presents. You know, I wanted to have like some, you know, horrible terminal illness or just something. Like, I always wanted the attention to be on me, even though, like I said, I'm terrified of everything. And when I got here and I read a little bit of the Big Book, and they talk about this idea of the egomaniac with the inferiority complex, like, those words still don't really make sense to me today, but the idea behind it of like, look at me, look at me, look at me, please don't look at me, don't talk to me, you know, I get that, right? Like, that is how I live my life, is like, I want to be extravagant and noticed, but if you talk to me, I'm either going to catch on fire or punch you. I don't know which is going to happen. And what happened for me is the first time that I got drunk, because I'm sure I drank or I sipped or I whatever, like, I'm from a real big Cuban family, everybody bees drunk all the time. So the first time, like, alcohol did its thing for me was Gasparilla weekend, and it was the weekend before my 16th birthday. And I had this, like, really obnoxious, extravagant party planned with these two other girls. Like, it was... there's a show on MTV about it. Not mine, but like, that's what it was supposed to be like. And so I went to this parade, and like I said, I grew up in South Tampa. So I've been to Gasparilla every year since I was like knee high to a duck. And this was the first year that I could go without the parents, or like, there were parents there. I'll never forget. It was Nally Martinez's mother, and she was there, but she like wasn't with us. So we could kind of get away with doing whatever we wanted to do. And I remember everything, you know what I mean? Like, I remember I wore my black Chuck Taylors. I had this, like, teal shirt that I cut into a halter top. I crimped my hair. It was going to be the best day of my life, right? No idea that it was going to change my life forever. I just knew that, like, yes, this is it. I'm going to arrive, you know, just because I wasn't allowed to do anything. Like, I wasn't allowed to get in the car with my friends who had licenses at the time. The rule was, if you didn't have a child of your own, I couldn't get in the car with you, and that did not count for teen moms. Like, my parents were just not interested in, you know, and I had a 10 o'clock curfew until I moved out at 18. My dad's a real cool dude, though. And, you know, I put them through hell, so I totally respect all of their decisions. However, thanks, Glenn. I went to this parade, and I did all my stuff, and I was like so fly, but, you know, like, I was weird, and I was uncomfortable, and, like, I didn't know how my skin would fit any day. And this kid came up to me and my girlfriends, and he had this Camelback full of Pirate's Punch, which I did not know it was full of Pirate's Punch. It was a backpack with a straw, and he said, "Do you want some?" And I said yes, right? And, like, my whole thing, my whole life is I say no. I am deathly afraid of what might happen if I might not like it. Is it maybe going to make me uncomfortable? Are you not going to like me? That's what happens, right, all the time in my head. So I say no, like, well, just better not, you know, let's be safe, let's not. And I said yes, because at this point in my life, like, I just, for the love of everything holy, wanted to fit in. I wanted to be cool more than I wanted to breathe air, and I was not. Like, it was just not cool. I had cool friends, though, so maybe that says something about me at that time. But anyway, so he says, you know, "Do you want this thing?" I drink the thing, and it was delicious, right? It was like pineapple-y. It was great, and I just drank and drank and drank and drank until he was like, "No, stop that. I did not mean, do you want to drink all of it? I meant, like, do you want to try it?" And what happened is not even, maybe 10 minutes, I don't know, I didn't have a watch at the time, but like almost, what I recall as like not instantly, but almost instantly, I remember skipping down the street and I felt electric. Like all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, I didn't give a shit what you thought about me. I was fantastic. You know, I didn't get taller or thinner or blonde. I was hilarious. And so that was just more noticed by other people. But I exuded this confidence that I had never had in my life, because for the first time that like, oh my God, are they gonna like me? Are they gonna make fun of me? Are you gonna talk shit about me behind my back? What are you gonna think about me when I walk away? Do you like what I'm wearing? I don't like what I'm wearing. Please like me so that I might like myself. That just shut off, like for the first time in my life. And I don't know, like I may have heard this before, but this was my experience. Immediately, I associated that with what I had drank. Like there wasn't a like, oh, I wonder what this is. I was like, nope, I'm drunk. I love it. Let's do it again. You know, like I cannot risk losing this feeling. So I made it my mission that day to continue said feeling. I'm not a real big person right now. At 15, I was like, I look like I was 9. So it didn't take much to like send me over the moon. And I don't remember a whole lot. You know, the last thing I remember is I had one of those drawstring nylon Nike backpacks that were real cool, you know, back in like 2003. And I had filled it with Smirnoff ice that I stole from a cooler in someone's yard. Because it's not really trespassing at Gasparilla because like everybody's drunk and there's always stuff out. But it kind of is if you're not like invited to parties. But I would like break into people's yards and just get everything I could. And I stuffed all these things in this backpack. And then I also fell on my back. So they all exploded all over me. And I was just like soaked with Smirnoff ice down my back. But I got picked up by my parents because I was like a pukey, cryy, drunk mess by the time they came to get me. And there was no like, I had food poisoning, guys. Like, no, there was like vomit in my hair. It was just not a good look. And my dad, he's real clever when it comes to punishment, which has been awesome now that I have a kid. Like, it's like the tables have turned. But he decided that the next day, like, I didn't even get a day, because I know, like, when he got caught drinking for the first time, he got a day to sleep, and then the manual labor kicked in, but not so much in my house. My dad, like, the very next day, because he did let me sleep that night, which was kind, because I probably would have puked more, but I don't know if anybody's ever worked construction, but if you ever try to sweep concrete dust, it doesn't actually happen, fun fact. And so we had an addition on the back of our house that was probably, like, a quarter, maybe like an eighth, I don't know, I'm not good at math, size of this room, and he was like, you're gonna sweep all of the dust up. I want to be able to take a white, wet hand and pick up no concrete dust. So I spent the entire next day with a giant push broom that was as big as me sweeping this concrete dust, and you know, just like puking in the yard and the spins and all of it, right? It was horrible. And then the next day at school, this is my favorite part, I got to hear what I did, because I didn't remember anything. And apparently, allegedly. But apparently the other thing that happened, because like I said, I got caught like being a gross, pukey, drunk mess by my parents. We had to cancel that party, this like big, elaborate 150 people, like my whole high school was invited, stupid party had to be canceled because it was the very next weekend. And I was like, you know, it's all right. Worse things have happened. But my favorite thing, so next day at school, my friends are like, oh my gosh, Jesse, like, we need to talk about this weekend. It's not cute. And allegedly, apparently, however you want to play it, I had like thrown up in a Starbucks, like in the chair, like sitting with my head between my knees, just puked on the ground. I dismantled a chip display at a gas station because I thought it needed to just not be standing anymore. And then I also made out with my friend's 12-year-old brother. So all of that was awkward and like moderately uncomfortable. But like, so two things happened. I was super stoked that people were talking to me and about me, which was fun. And I just didn't care. Like in my head, I was like, you guys are all lying because you're jealous of how awesome I became overnight. You know, of course you're gonna make up these stories about me. You know, but like mostly like all those consequences, right? Like concrete dust sweeping, canceling the party, everybody thinks you're a disgusting hooker face, all that stuff, right? Like I'm cool with it, right? Like that's what happened. In that moment, I was willing to sell my soul to recreate that feeling of euphoria, because that's what alcohol gave me. You know what I mean? Like, it shut off the noise in my head. And I didn't know that at the time. I just was like, yes, this is my thing. This is going to make me awesome. Like, I can talk to people. Super excited. You know, and I was willing to do whatever it took to get that again. And I gotta tell you, like, I never experienced that ever again until never, you know, it never ever happened like that ever again. And I experienced a couple high school parties where we ran out of booze. That was not cute. And I never went out with like this, I have to get faded, like I have to get so messed up mentality. I was like, oh, it's like we're in high school and we're drinking and it's fun, you know. But like a couple nights where we ran out, I was like, oh no, no sir, this is not acceptable. Not a fan. And so I started, like, at 17 years old, anytime there was a party, as soon as we started, I'd hide like 9 to 12 beers all over the house, because sometimes drunk people are smart and they look in the crisper drawer. So I'd be like under the couch, behind the TV, like everywhere, because I couldn't handle a night where everybody was done and I was still awake and not where I needed to be. And, you know, like, my dad's real cool and a super hard ass, and, like, he helped me graduate high school by pretty much, like, alarming me into my room every night for several years, which was great. And then I moved down to Fort Myers. I, like, got accepted into college, which was cool. Like, I had all these things that I was going to do. I was going to be a grown-up. I watched this movie and picked my major based off of it, and then I spent 24 hours at school, and the guy I was seeing said something of, like, oh, I don't know how long distance is going to work. And I was like, oh, got to go. Bye. See you, college. You know, I got to go be with this guy in Fort Myers because he's the one, obviously. There's been a lot of ones. Now I'm married, so, like, he's the one. But, you know, so I, and it wasn't that I was like, oh, no, college is going to be too hard. Like, but I think deep down, like, there was a level of just terrifiedness of, like, having to do anything, you know. And so I moved down to Fort Myers, like, shortly after high school, and I lived with my mom, and we partied a lot. It was, like, really out of control. My life looked like a movie often until I got arrested, and that was uncomfortable. You know, I like never, I mean, I had like a couple speeding tickets because I'm very, very self-centered, but I hadn't really gotten in trouble for anything serious. And I was 20, and I got, well, no, my cousin got pulled over. It's Nicole's fault, but told her not to speed. I'm just kidding. It's not her fault. It's my fault for being a dumbass. Anyway, so we get pulled over and I'm an idiot and the cop decides I, like, said some stuff. So the cop, my girl, sorry, the cops went through my stuff, and again, I'm an idiot, so I had, like, all these things, like, you're not supposed to have on you ever, according to the government and the police and all those things. So that was fun, you know, and it's crazy. I just remember sitting in what looked, it reminded me so much of, like, a kindergarten classroom, but it was at the Lee County Sheriff's Office, which was totally weird. So I went through all my stuff, and I had just one of those moments, right? Like, I have probably 5 moments of clarity, if you want to call them that, but nothing changed. Like, I was just, like, horrified at my life, you know. I was just sitting there in this room while he's pulling all these bags out of my purse, and the cop said something like, you know, ma'am, these aren't the kinds of things that you should keep in a Coach bag. And I was just like, yes, I know, you know. I just started crying, and I just remember thinking, like, God, because my grandfather had passed away, like, about a, actually no, strike that, like, 2 months before I got arrested for the first time. And and it didn't hit me then, like, just how much that messed me up. Because, like, my grandfather and I, he's my best friend, you know. Like, he was my hero. He was my everything. And when I was about 6 or 8 months sober, it just hit me that, like, this would have been such a cool thing to experience with him. And you know, he had one of those classic AA funerals, like, 150 people, because he touched so many lives here. You know, I just had one of those moments where I was like, oh, God, Pop would be so pissed right now. You know, and I just felt like I had let him down. And so I you know, did absolutely nothing. I got out of jail, and, you know, I remember sitting in jail, and I was like, all right, you got to get it together. You can't do this stuff. Like, this is not appropriate. Definitely should get a job. That's going to be priority numero uno. And, you know, and as soon as I got out of there and I got home, it was dark, so I drink when it's dark out, you know, like, it's time to party. And I, like, lived with these 4 dudes in this, like, clearly, like, college-style apartment house, and it was disgusting all of the time. Can't tell you how many, like,
cups I picked up to drink that had cigarette butts and dip spit in them because I thought they were from beer pong. But yeah, so like I just kind of continued doing that, and then I continued to get into some other legal trouble, and you know, I just started like to rack up things, right? Because I would just make decisions that I thought were such good ideas at the time. Like, yeah, I'm gonna take this job. It's great. There's something really sketchy happening, but they let me nap in the storeroom. Like, so we'll just deal with the sketchy shit later. And then all of a sudden, I have a grand larceny charge. Like, this is just what happens, right? And it's not that like, oh my God, wrong place, wrong time, bad things happen to me. Like, no, I make really stupid decisions based on self. And I had no idea that that's what I was doing. Like, I didn't know that I so desperately wanted to continue my life the way that it was, that I was willing to make whatever idiotic decision came my way. You know, like the idea of like getting a 9-to-5 job where like maybe it might not be so cute if I was like showing up the next day in the clothes I wore last night. That just was not, it wouldn't work for me, you know. And then I worked at a children's shoe store and I would show up to sell shoes to kids wearing nightclub attire. It was just terrible. And so what ended up happening is like I got in some like real legal trouble. I mean, like I had already been in real legal trouble. Like I messed up the pretend probation that you get when like the first time you ever get in trouble, they put you on PTI, and like I screwed that up, and then I like had this grand larceny charge, so I was like actually gonna go to prison. And I remember I called my dad, and like there was no intention of like, Dad, come and save me, but I just real nonchalantly was like, yeah, you want me to take this polygraph test? I'm gonna do it. Like, it's not a big deal. I didn't steal the money, so it's gonna be fine. And he did not think that that was appropriate, so he hired me an attorney and made me pack up all my stuff and get in my car and drive down to St. Pete to go live with them. And I had this dog. She's still alive. She's not dead. Her name was Micah, and she was this like adorable little pit bull puppy that I had acquired, which was just not a good idea. I could not take care of myself. There were 6 months where I did not brush my hair. I had dreadlocks that were not on purpose. You know, I had to pay someone at Fantastic Sam's once for 8 hours to brush my hair out because it was disgusting. Like, it's, you know, I heard somebody talk about accidental dreadlocks one time. You only hear that shit here in AA. You know what I mean? Like, nobody in real life is like, oh, I have accidental dreads, you know, because my life is unmanageable. But that's where I was, right? Like, I had no business having this dog. I couldn't take her out. Her crate always had, like, an inch of pee in it. There were fleas everywhere. She ate birthday cake. So did I for, like, 6 months one time. When my roommate would have dog food, I would steal it from her. Riley, I, like, related so much to what you were talking about. I would steal everything from anybody. If it wasn't nailed down, I was stealing it. I wouldn't help you look for it. I would just be like, oh, it's really unfortunate that those things went missing. I would get wasted and steal from my best friend. Like, I'd just be in her kitchen like, I need this. You know, just, I would get drunk and I would go steal from stores. I did that. I got arrested for shoplifting at Walmart. That was uncomfortable. But, so, you know, I got all my stuff and I got my dog and I moved home and, you know, around this time, like, this wasn't even the worst, but, like, things were happening, like, I was, you know, running out of gas regularly, you know, or, and my parents, because they're, I don't think they're, like, really enablers, but, like, they mean well. They had given me a gas card. Like, I would just stay running out of gas on the side of the road constantly. Like, I just couldn't do life at all. You know, I could, like, by now, and I was 21 at the time, and I would always convince myself, like, whatever was going on, I was like, oh, yeah, but if I'm at college, everybody's going to be living like this, for sure. If I had stayed at FSU, absolutely everybody would drink like I do. I'm pretty sure that their, like, floor doesn't squish when you walk on it. Most people, unless they end up here. Like, one of my sponsors, she might have, like, qualified, but she's also sober now, so. But I just... or like whoever I was hanging out with or whatever I was doing, there was always somebody who was worse than me, or like if I was with people my own age or whatever, I would just rationalize it. And I have this ability to convince myself of anything. Like, it's real dangerous because I can do it today. I can convince myself that the sky is magenta if I feel like it. And that's why I need you guys. That's why I need to be here and talk to people, because like Jesse, with Jesse's brain, it's a disaster. Like, I just make all kinds, in sobriety, I make decisions like, I think I should join the army right now. You know, no, I should not join the army. I do not enjoy being told what to do. And I really, really, really like spray tans. You know, like, I just, no, doesn't work. But that's the kind of stuff that I do. Like, right, I make these crazy decisions in my head that I think like, oh my God, my life, I don't know what to do with it. Let me sell all of my stuff and move to the Everglades. Like, what? No. You know, so that's why I need you guys. But so anyways, I moved to St. Pete. Stuff starts to get real scary, right? I'm blacking out all the time now. You know, like I'm blacking out driving my car. I'm blacking out in and coming to, and I didn't know that's what this was. Like I was like, oh, I think I have narcolepsy. You know, like I blacked out a great deal driving my car, and I thought that I was falling asleep also. I remember I told a taxi driver once, I was like, yeah, no, I have narcolepsy. It's this disorder where you fall asleep. Like, no, I was just no longer present is what was happening. And like I said, it was starting to get scary, right? Like I was coming to with people in situations that I didn't know I had signed up for. I was coming to in my car constantly, like on 275. Sometimes I would make it all the way to I-75 and just be like, oh, we're in Sarasota now. Huh. Cool. Didn't know that I decided to do that. I was on probation while I was doing that too. So like there was one night that I like got my car stuck in the median. And I got out and it was like water to my knees, so I fell in the water and I flagged down a trooper and it's like 2 a.m. and I'm like outside of my county, my tags are expired and I'm on probation. And the cop, I had AAA, that's the best part of this whole story. I told the cop that I had friends in my car and I didn't. I had like a 4-pack of Steel Reserve and half a bottle of wine that I had drank. And so naturally he was like, oh, the friends. So that he calls an ambulance, or the fire truck, the paramedic people, they show up and they're like, ma'am, there's no one in the car. And by now I'm like a little bit more lucid. So I was like, yeah, there's no one in the car. What are you talking about? Can I call AAA? Like, can I do that now? And the cop was like, absolutely not. And, you know, he had one of those, like, young lady, I could take you to jail talks. And he didn't, though. Like, it's crazy because I related to your story about that, Riley. Like, I had one of those instances where, like, I had violated my probation so many times that the judge, I will never forget this, he was like, he said to me, Miss Aguero, if you come back here in front of me ever again, I am going to throw the book at you. You are going to do the maximum allowable sentence, because I just like could not get it together. And my parents, God bless them, they were steady throwing money at it, trying to keep me out of prison. And I just wasn't hearing it. You know, so I was like, this was the one, right? Like this was the violation that was gonna make me go away for a while. And he didn't. Like, he didn't write anything up. He didn't give me a ticket, nothing. He drove me to the Waffle House and let me call a cab. He did not let me call AAA, which I thought was a little bit insensitive, because then I had to tell my parents what had happened and get my car out of the impound in Sarasota. But, you know, like, that's the kind of stuff that when I got here and I started to get sober for a little bit, I noticed, like, there was something. Something did not want me going to prison. And I don't know why, you know. Like, I thought, you know, I have no idea until I got here and I realized like I had a purpose. I had a unique qualification to help other alcoholics. And that's something that I love so, so dearly about Alcoholics Anonymous is like we can help where no one else can. Because I got to tell you, like I tried church. I hung out with the church kids. Like I have this like super Christian part of my family. And I was like, okay, let's go hang out with you guys because you seem happy and you're not getting calls from your landlord that you left your car on with the doors open in an adjacent parking lot, you know, like, I drove all over St. Pete looking for my car that day. You know, like, they're not having these things happen. They're not waking up in jail. Yet somehow I just couldn't get what they had, you know, and I went to therapy and I saw doctors and I couldn't get it together. And, you know, the last night that I drank, I'll never forget it because it wasn't until I got here that I heard the idea of the phenomenon of craving. I didn't know what that was. And I remember I was telling a friend of mine that like, oh, you know, I think I might be alcoholic. My aunt asked if I'd go to an AA meeting with her. And so I said yes. Because the night before was fucking terrible. You know what I mean? Like, there's no other way you want to cut it. It was one of those nights that like I woke up and I wanted to die so bad. I did some stuff willingly that I'm not ashamed of it today because it's an experience I've been able to help plenty of girls with, but it's stuff that like I wouldn't sign up for, you know, of my own accord. I wouldn't sign up for if I was lucid. And, you know, and I put myself in positions that just allowed me to be hurt over and over again. And, you know, and I was just broken. I was so broken. And so, you know, the idea was thrown out, like, do you want to go to a meeting? And actually, the question was asked is, you know, when you drink, do bad things happen? And I've heard speakers talk about how people come in here by seconds and inches. Because I think if I had had that conversation with my aunt 30 minutes before or 30 minutes later, I wouldn't have been honest with her. Because I said, yeah, every time I drink, something terrible happens. In that moment, I could not remember when it was fun. Today, hell yeah, I can tell you all kinds of stories that were fun. But in that moment, all I could remember was the pain, you know, and I said, yeah, you know, so I told my friend, I was like, yeah, I think I'm alcoholic, I'm gonna go to a meeting, and he's like, are you sure? I don't think you're alcoholic. This is somebody that saw me at my worst. So we went out and we had some controlled drinks, right? I never heard that until I got here. You know, we had two whiskey sours. I remember what I was wearing exactly like I did that day at the Gasparilla Festival because it was the last time I ever drank. And I remember sitting there with him and thinking to myself, I wasn't allowed to bring in my wallet because we were like really going to control these drinks. And I remember sitting there with him, we were just talking about life and whatever the hell else. And I was like, oh my God, I don't feel this drink yet. I don't know what to do. Is he going to judge me if I drink both of these before he drinks his first one? Maybe he'll go inside and use the bathroom and then I can run inside and I can find somebody and get him to buy me a couple of drinks and I can drink them before he gets back and then he won't know that I've had more than two because I don't feel it yet. That is what happened in my head while I was talking to someone. And that's because I was not getting the effect produced. Like, I drink for the effect produced by alcohol. That is why I drink. I like what it does to me. Problem is, I can't say when I'm gonna, what's gonna happen when I drink. And when I say I don't wanna drink, I'm probably gonna drink anyways. And that's what makes me alcoholic. And I learned that here, you know. And then I learned that the only solution to that is gonna be some kind of spiritual program in a relationship with a power greater than myself. And the very first thing I had to accept is that that power is not me. I am not all powerful. I don't know shit. I need to ask for help. And I'm stubborn. And I'm real opinionated. And I am bullheaded to a T. But what I saw here is that I saw how broken I was when I got here because I saw what it meant to be put back together. And I saw that you guys said you asked for help and that you believed in a power greater than yourselves. And I thought to myself, because the women that came before me that taught me how to walk this walk, if they can do it and it works, maybe I'll try it. And I identified so much with being an alcoholic. However, I did not identify at all with the fact that smoking reefer was not a good idea. So I did that for 9 months, right? I came here, I worked steps, I got wicked sober, and I did all the things, right? Only I was miserable. And around 9 months sober, I just decided, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to stop smoking pot because it's disrespectful to AA, and I'm lying to my AA people. And then I lied about it for 3 years, right? Like, I picked up multiple chips, and I was not honest about the fact that I've been smoking weed. And I would hear people talk about it, right? Like, I would hear people talk about marijuana maintenance, and your secrets keep you sick, and I'd just be like, not me. No, not me. Maybe you, but not me. And that's what I wanted, right? Like, we hear about this terminal uniqueness here in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just so desperately wanted to have this a la carte sobriety. I wanted to be different than you. And it's crazy, right? Because all I ever wanted my whole life was to fit in. I wanted to be a part of so, so desperately, but like, you bring me here and you give me a solution, I'm like, nah, I'm just a little bit different. It's okay. And what happened is it was going to kill me. You know, I was a terror in Alcoholics Anonymous. I did the stuff, right? I sponsored people, I prayed, I had service commitments, I chaired bid committees and all kinds of stuff. But like, I walked around here with this mentality and a very palpable attitude of, you don't know what I can do and still stay sober. Because that's what was starting to happen. It's like, I was starting to try to fight girls. Just to see if I could, you know, and not drink over it. I was doing some real screwed up stuff with my boyfriend at the time. I was acting out in ways that I would have only done if I was still drinking. And what I learned here is just because I stopped drinking, the problem does not go away. The problem is me. All I have is a daily reprieve. All I have is the actions and the work and the effort that I put in today that's going to keep me sober today and hopefully keep my actions in check. And for me, what I've learned is that if I don't, practice rigorous honesty, like I tell people what's really going on with me at all times. I don't care who you are. If you ask me how I'm doing, you're going to get the truth. Don't ask me how I'm doing if you want like a fine thank you. It will not happen because I spent too many years of my sobriety not being honest about that stuff and it almost killed me. So I've learned that like I have to ask for help here and I have to rely on something that's not me. And I have this incredible relationship with God. And I know I'm running out of time, but I just want to share, you know, about the last, very quickly, about the last year. So last year, my sobriety has been real interesting, right? About, what are we, in October? So a little over a year ago, I got engaged to a man I met in AA. and I had this idea that we were both gonna be sober forever. I have this incredible sponsor, like she's the one I got honest with about smoking the weed. I have this banging job, right? I'm just killing it at life. I got a new car, like things are good, right? I had just come off of hosting Ficky Paw, which was like the culmination of all of my sobriety. You know, I'd been doing that the whole time. And, you know, I was active in service. I was sponsoring all these girls. And, like, I'm everything's great, right? And so I spend the next year, you know, planning this wedding. And everything is, whatever. So I got married last November. I'm really bad at linear time. So I got married last November, and it's this guy I met in AA. And like right, probably 3 or 4 months before that, my sponsor told me she's moving across the country because her husband's in the Army. Which I thought, like, okay, that sucks. And you know, and then about 2 months after we got married, actually a month after we got back from our honeymoon, my husband decided to tell me that he was no longer alcoholic, and he was gonna drink. And that was shitty, you know. And then my job was also shitty. And, you know, and then a few months, about a year before that, we got custody of his son. So, like, my whole world went from, like, fantastic to, what the fuck, God? Like, really? Everything. And I remember having that thought. And I hate even saying that out loud, right? Because I've been so blessed with so many things. Like, I have this incredible relationship with my family today that I owe 100% to Alcoholics Anonymous. But I just remember thinking, like, everything was perfect. Why did this happen to me? And I don't know why. It doesn't matter. I don't know why I'm alcoholic. None of that shit matters. What matters is what I did, you know? And real talk, for the first 3 months, I was like, nope, I'm just going to not going to life, not going to go to meetings. I like just stepped back from life, you know, and I got real crazy. And I ended up losing my job, and things were real tumultuous at home, and I made a decision to just do the work, you know. And the stuff that worked when I was new still works today. It's real interesting, you know. I started praying again, and I started coming to more meetings, and I got a home group because I was like anti, you know, everything for a long time. And it's not perfect right now, you know what I mean? Like, life is not sunshine and roses, but something that, but it's better, right? My husband's back in AA, I have a pretty decent job now, you know, my kid gets relatively good grades, I don't resent him every single day for living in my house. What I was told in the beginning, and this is very important for me to remember every day of my life, is life is going to happen, no matter what. The sun's gonna come up, the sun's gonna go down. People are gonna be born, people are gonna die. Job, no job, wife, no wife. You can stay sober if you do the work. And I can be okay. No matter what, I can be okay. Now, okay does not mean I'm gonna love what's going on. Okay means that I don't have to drink no matter what. Okay means that I will come here and I will have a solution and I have an army of sober people to carry me through whatever comes my way. That's what okay means. And so long as I do the work, which is the steps, and build my relationship with God and be here and just try to do tomorrow a little bit better than today, I'm gonna be fine. So if you didn't get anything out of that at all, please stick around. To everybody who's new, welcome. There's 100,000 different experiences in AA. I'm just an example of what happens if you do the work. Thank you.